Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud is brought to you by PLS Classes, online and on-site graduate classes and professional development opportunities delivered by master facilitators from 8 accredited college partners. Visit plsclasses.com for more.
Hello and welcome to the Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud podcast. For the last 35 years, I've had the opportunity to learn with educators at all levels, both nationally and internationally. In each of the coming episodes, I'll explore my thoughts and my learning on a variety of topics connected to teaching, learning, and leading. Thanks for listening in. A look at differentiated instruction. On today's podcast, I'm excited to welcome Gloria Herlihy, a 8th grade physical science teacher in Mill Creek Township, Pennsylvania, and a instructor of graduate classes that deal with differentiated instruction. Welcome, Gloria.
Good morning.
Great to have you here. So for a starter, Gloria, would you give me the description or the definition that you use for differentiated instruction?
That's a tough one to define. There's so many parts to differentiation. I look at differentiated instruction more as a way to find a way to make things work for the students in your classroom, whether that be incorporating some choice, adapting materials, changing a product that you want them to produce. There's no one-size-fits-all definition for differentiation, just like there's no one-size-fits-all approach to education.
So are you taking the outcomes that you want students to reach and exploring different ways that students can get to that outcome?
Absolutely.
Does that fit?
Yes, perfectly.
So if I was observing in your 8th grade physical science class, what are some of the things I'd see happening that I would put the label of differentiated instruction on?
You would see some differentiated materials. I have multiple levels, particularly in one of my classes, and students don't all have the same ability, therefore they don't all have the same materials. You would see different assessment for these students as well. I also have a class where I have honor students. Their materials look different from my academic students. And sometimes it's just the way we go about things, whether it be a straight up pencil paper test or a performance-based test. Sometimes students have a choice, whether they take a regular test or do some kind of project to demonstrate their understanding.
How much time are you working with whole group instruction in your classroom?
That varies from day to day. Some days it might be the whole class. Other days it might be none of the class, you know, depending on whether we are looking at new material or a review type thing or some kind of reinforcement. The reinforcement is where I find I differentiate a lot more because the students can be a little bit more independent at that point.
Has a differentiated approach has always been part of your approach to teaching, or have you kind of gone through a change process?
I'd say a change process, definitely. I've been teaching since the mid-80s, so things in education have certainly changed in those 30 years, and so has my teaching style. It's not, you know, a notes lecture-based instruction anymore. That really doesn't. It has its place, certainly, but it can't be the whole basis of instruction anymore. We lose too many students, too many kids slip through the cracks.
So looking back at that history of time, and mine goes back further than yours does, would you say there's an expectation on all students getting to an outcome that perhaps wasn't there earlier that drives that need and push for teachers to be exploring differentiation?
To a point, you know, there used to be self-contained classes for everything for our learning support students. There were students that I didn't have previously in class that are in class now because there's more of a belief that the teachers can help them get there. And before, well, they can't do it, so we're going to put them in a different classroom. So, you know, now they expect us to help them get there. And many are. They're achieving pretty well when you can work with them on a level that makes sense to them and help them understand things more. You know, I think particularly of an autistic student that I have right now that even earlier in the year, they talked about taking him out of the class. And I'm like, well, that doesn't even make sense. And I have an aide in my classroom, and between me and her, we're able to, we call it sometimes adapt on the fly, but, you know, really just kind of change what he's doing a little bit so that he's still getting the main concepts and he participates as much as the other kids. So I think he's really benefiting from this change of attitude toward education.
Would you describe a little bit of how you build student choice into assisting the differentiation?
Sure. Sometimes with a particular project, I might give them an option of, you know, maybe writing a poem or producing a poster, or I've even said, oh, well, maybe you prefer a test, you know, because some kids actually, they're so ingrained into the way they've been taught that they have a hard time getting out of their comfort zone and having a choice. That's been the, like, teachers think it's so great to provide students choice, and I have students who panic over it. But I tell me what I have to do, Mrs. Early. Like, well, what do you want to do? And there are students we actually have to choose for, which is kind of funny. But there's others who are, oh, thank you for letting me make a poster instead of taking a test, because I really can show you that I know this, but not with a test. You know, so that's kind of a fun thing to do with assessment for them. And they've enjoyed it, you know, and you don't typically get a thank you after a regular pencil and paper test. it's not their preferred mode, but if you can give them options, you know, and even on just a basic assignment, you know, here's two different things that you can do to make this happen. You can do this or you can do this, and pick one. And they're like, oh, I don't have to do both. Like, no, because one or, you know, either one will show me that you've demonstrated your understanding. So go ahead and pick one. And they're like, oh, cool. So they kind of get it. For the most part, kids enjoy the choice, but it is really funny when they can't make a choice.
Yeah, yeah. How about the role of students working collaboratively, or students, teaching students? Does that fit into your strategy for differentiating?
It does, especially with science, you know, because we're always doing activities and labs and hands-on experiments. And if I creatively can craft their groups, you can really have students learning from one another. Every once in a while, I'll pull somebody aside prior to a lesson and say, hey, I want you to do this part of the lesson for me. And they're like, what? Like, they don't understand having that role. You know, they think, no, you're in charge, just you're the teacher. And I'm like, that's okay. I'll help you. I'll support you. Don't worry about it. But so many kids just like that in charge kind of role. And I feel like when the kids are seeing other students in charge, they think, ooh, maybe I could do that next time. And just gives them a little boost.
Is it that the student's taking on a challenge in the role that you put them in?
Oh, absolutely.
And sometimes communicating something differently than we can communicate.
Yes, absolutely. And I have had that conversation with people so many times, like, well, just let them figure that out for themselves or learn it from somebody else, because we don't think like 14-year-olds, which I think is probably a really good thing in most of but,
I'm sure.
They communicate with each other so much better than we communicate with them. They don't understand everything that we want them to get to everybody sometimes, but they sometimes just break things down totally differently. And when we're doing some activity that maybe requires a lot of reinforcement and instruction and guidance, once I have three or four kids who get it, I'm like, okay, now get up, find somebody who needs help. And then I have everybody who gets it raise their hand and like, okay, if you need help, grab one of them. And the kids, you know, they're okay sometimes to admit to one of their friends that they need a little bit of help, but they maybe don't want me to help them because it's not cool.
Yeah, that's a great learning environment that you create there. I know I was always
shocked when it would happen that a student would turn to a student who was confused and say, what Mr. Barkley really means is, and suddenly the kid gets it, you know, and I think that's exactly what I was saying, what the other student said, but I was sure glad somebody stepped in to make the communication happen, because what I was doing wasn't.
Oh yeah. They get it. It's pretty cool. If we can trust them, then they can help out a lot.
So, Gloria, a lot of the folks who listen to this podcast have roles in coaching, in instructional coaches, or in some cases, administrators who are observing in teachers' classrooms and providing coaching feedback. If you had the chance to have a coach in your classroom, what is it you'd like a coach to be observing and giving you feedback on that would assist you as the teacher in either assessing your differentiation or identifying maybe where more was needed?
I think it'd be neat if there was somebody there who could really take a look and, you know, almost break down the class by 5-10 minute increments and say, you know, was this whole group, was this more student directed? Were students collaborating at this point? And, you know, to really take a look at that time breakdown, because you, as a teacher, it's really hard to do that kind of thing yourself. And that would be a great support to have. We don't have coaches in our district, but that would be neat.
So if a coach did that for a class period, when you were looking at the coach's notes, what is it that you'd be looking for to use this information for yourself?
I would look to see if I had too much teacher-directed instruction, or did I have a lot of student-centered activities, whatever, and how productive was that? You know, that's what, there's group work and then there's effective group work. And sometimes students learning from students, that's exactly what's happening. And sometimes students collaborating has to be managed a lot better than it always is. So that's the piece I'd really like to look at. Were the groups right? Was sometimes random grouping, I think, can be really effective, but sometimes you have to put that 15-20 minutes into arranging those groups of kids to make sure that those activities you're trying to provide are going to meet those needs.
Interesting. In some of my work in coaching, one of the things that pops up analyzing the piece that you've described there is the amount of time that students had to wait. So uh-huh. as the teacher's attention was in one group or one activity, how much of the time were the other students actually engaged or more in a waiting stage? And of course, the same thing can happen with whole group when I identify a student or two that are struggling. And now as part of my whole group instruction, I'm trying to work on the two kids who are struggling, realizing that everybody else is waiting through that time. And that's extremely difficult for the teacher to realize what's happening because our focus is on the need that jumped up in front of us.
Absolutely. I experienced that a lot still today. And, you know, and I think you almost have to preload the day, understanding that that's going to happen, especially when you have some new difficult material and have something available, you know, some anchor activities, things that students can keep in their binders or folders that they can turn to. And, you know, you see the hands going up and you hear the questions. Oh, hey, yeah, take out that, you know, that activity on properties of matter and use that for some reinforcement right now. Oh, okay. As long as they have something to focus on, usually then that wait time doesn't seem so bad,
yeah.
but you got to set it up.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's pre-thinking it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Gloria, tell us a little bit about the course that you teach, the title Differentiated Instruction for Today's Classroom.
Right. It's a great class. It's one of the classes that has a lot of activities in it. And for some people, they get a little bit overwhelmed. But as you start to work through the course, you find that everything that is assigned, you know, to the teachers who are taking the courses is something you can work on today and use tomorrow in class. That was my biggest takeaway from this class was, holy cow, like I can do this tomorrow. You know, some of the assignments are take a lesson you're about to teach and create a choice board for your students. And, you know, if you're thinking, oh, you know, 2 weeks in advance, I'm going to be doing, you know, balancing chemical equations, you can create that choice board now, get it copied, and there it is ready for you. You know, it really looks at what differentiation is, what differentiation is not. You know, it's not this trying to plan 28 lessons for 28 students. And, you know, some people have that, you know, in their mind, and it's just not really what it is. It's, you know, it's a lot about providing choice or mixing things up in the classroom, providing stations and centers. And, you know, sometimes you vary the process for somebody, or you vary the content for somebody else, you vary the product for somebody else, and you're not trying to differentiate every single lesson every single day. There's that part of it too that we really clarify is that we're not saying you aren't differentiating enough, but probably could do a little bit more, and that you can't differentiate every class every day. The people who say that they do that every day are maybe overinflating themselves. But you know, it's just to get started. We leave the students with so many takeaways that you can almost incorporate something right away. You know, like there's a part to the class that's called the DIA Instructor Toolbox. It's a 58-page document, which sounds insane, but I keep it in my school bag all the time. And if I'm planning and, you know, I've been teaching this content for many, many years, I'm like, that needs something else. I pull that out. And our hope is that students from our classes will do the same and just say, oh yeah, this is a place I could use ThinkDots or Choice Board or Tic-Tac-Toe. There's just so many strategies in there that they will have used throughout the course. So they know how to use them. They've used them as students. And then we want to transfer it over and have them use them as teachers as well.
Sounds like the participants build a lot of options.
They do. And, you know, especially when they're taking it during the school year, I think it's great because they can, you know, again, use it right away.
Test it out.
Yeah, exactly. And teachers using it in the summer, they always have these lessons in mind that just, they're like, you know, they kind of have to look through things for a while. And then they go, this would be great next year. And they get a little bit more excited and gives them that energy sometimes to get started for a new year too.
I'm hearing it sounds like there's a reflection opportunity built in here where you're causing people to look at their current practice and consider where they'd like to have more options than they have now, and then be able to gather up what those options might be.
Oh, absolutely. That's the whole goal of the course is not to, not to trash everything you're doing, but just to add to it. You've got one thing going, two things might be better. And, you know, maybe you can have three things going on in a class, but you're not going to have 28.
I'm wondering what resistance might emerge when people first come into the course and are exploring the concept of differentiation. Are there resistances that the teachers are kind of worried or concerned about that you end up having to address in the course?
I think it's, you know, some of the stuff I already mentioned is it's just getting that idea that it's trying to teach every student separately. And it is a little overwhelming, the planning involved. They think, you know, like, you know, it's enough to plan one thing going on. How do I plan three things? And once they realize if you're putting your energy into your planning, your teaching becomes a lot easier. Mm-hmm. And that time in class it's a shift of what the teacher is doing instead of standing up there and trying to keep the attention of 26 kids for 48 minutes or whatever that might be. The kids are actively engaged because you've spent the time planning the activities. And I think once they understand that, you know, that front loading of time makes that time in class so much less stressful. And at the end of the day, you're not, you know, like a wet rat because you're running around like a crazy person. And you aren't trying to keep attention of 28 kids because the activity is keeping their attention. And if you're meeting them at the right level and allowing them to choose, they're so much more engaged. But that's the thing that usually comes up is, wow, that's so much planning. How can I plan so many different activities? Like, well, you don't have to plan so many different activities. If you have one good one, how can you change a little bit so you have two?
How about classroom management? Does the concern about classroom management emerge?
A little bit. And differentiation, depending on the activities and how it's planned, assumes some independence of students. So as the teacher, you know who those students are that you probably have to stay a little bit closer to. And it gives you that opportunity to kind of build the lesson so that you can spend more time with this particular group of students. And, you know, and a lot of it is, you know, quick check-ins with certain groups and maybe 10 minutes with this group, but you've just checked in with the other groups who are a lot more independent. And depending on if you're doing groups, setting up roles for these students and making sure that everybody has something to accomplish within the group too, and some group responsibility makes a whole lot of difference as well. And sometimes the management does become difficult, and then you have to step back, like with anything, you know, teachers are constantly reassessing what they're doing and saying, oh yeah, maybe this isn't the best way to do this. And then you start over just like anything.
I was kind of hearing in there that planning for the management is another part of the planning.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you know your students, and it can be as simple as where you're putting people in the classroom. You know, seating charts is huge. I know teachers who don't use them, and I can't possibly understand why, but you know, when they're giving them choice in where they sit, that's fine. But you definitely have to plan for the management of how it's all going to work out. If you have different activities, you have different materials for different activities, and, you know, super clear instructions, super clear procedures, make a difference in any classroom, and certainly in a differentiated classroom, that would be really important as well.
Thanks. Gloria, I'm wondering if you have a favorite story about your own discovery or implementation of using differentiation, or something that's happened to one of the participants in your classes that's maybe illustrative of the rewards for putting the effort on the teacher's part into the process.
I know when we do certain activities at school, and again, it comes back to that, the students appreciating the opportunity to have the choice. In my honors class, you know, a lot of people think differentiation is all about helping the kids who struggle, but that's one part of it. But you also want to be able to challenge those kids who are very high achievers. And we do independent projects in that class. And at the end of the project, you know, as they're going through it, they're like, oh my gosh, this is so much work. And by the end of it, they're like, I learned so much, you know, and that's really cool that I really spend a lot of time at the beginning telling them to do something that interests them. And I've had students, I had one particular student who was, he was in my honors class, but he was not the top of that class. But his project, he did it on hockey. He was a hockey player. And it was the best project that year because he was so into it. So instead of me saying it has to relate to a topic in physical science, it was more about teaching the process of, you know, working through the scientific method and experimentation and sharing your data. He was so into it. The kids were so impressed, even. The other kids are like, oh my gosh, Mr. Lee, you did such a great job. And like, yeah, wow. Like it was a really neat opportunity for him to shine because he was able to understand that he could put his own interests into that project.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, Gloria, thanks a lot. And just want to check that you're okay if I put your email address into the heading on the podcast. So if anybody has questions, they could connect with you directly.
For sure. No problem.
Okay. Thanks, and have a great day.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening, folks. I'd love to hear what you're pondering. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Barkley, or send me your questions and find my videos and blogs at barkleypd.com.